Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Geopolitical Report for July 27th, 2026. I'm Phil Adler. Taking ownership stakes in key high-tech companies is only one way the federal government is exerting its influence on the economy. A whole new economic system appears to be emerging, one that Confluence Chief Market Strategist Patrick Fearon Hernandez calls the corporatist state. Patrick joins us today to discuss this transition and why, as an investment strategist, he's taking notice. First, Patrick, I'm not sure I like the sound of corporatist state. It sounds undemocratic, is it?
Well, hi, Phil. Thanks for having me on the program. To answer your question, it's a fair reaction because the term often gets confused with authoritarianism or even fascism. But corporatism is better understood as a political economic system in which the government seeks to simultaneously co-opt and manage the interests of both business and labor. Historically, corporatist systems have existed across a spectrum of governments. Some were democratic, while others were authoritarian. What distinguishes corporatism is not necessarily the absence of elections, but rather the degree to which government actively coordinates economic activity and maintains political support by distributing benefits to major economic constituencies. In practice, corporatist systems tend to require a relatively strong executive branch because someone has to have sufficient authority to balance competing interests and enforce agreements. That can create tensions with traditional liberal democratic norms, but corporatism itself isn't synonymous with dictatorship.
Well, how does it differ from the U.S. economic system it appears to be replacing, the one that we're all used to, a system you describe as liberal pluralism?
Well, under liberal pluralism, political power generally alternates between groups representing business interests and groups representing labor interests. Elections function as the mechanism that determines which coalition has greater influence at a given moment. For most of American history, we've seen that pendulum swing back and forth. During the New Deal era, for example, labor generally enjoyed greater influence. During the Reagan era and much of the period that followed, business interests held a stronger position. So, corporatism changes that dynamic. Rather than choosing between labor and capital, the government attempts to co-opt both simultaneously. Businesses continue to earn profits, and workers continue receiving benefits. The government acts as the central coordinator that seeks to keep both groups invested in the system. The result is potentially greater policy continuity and less political volatility, but also more direct government involvement in economic outcomes.
Patrick, I'm wondering how geopolitics might be driving this transition. Is this change something that needs to happen for the United States to compete in a new global environment?
Geopolitics is arguably one of the primary drivers. For roughly three decades after the Cold War, globalization encouraged governments to minimize intervention and allow markets to allocate resources. But that mindset has changed dramatically. The strategic rivalry between the U.S. and China has highlighted vulnerabilities in supply chains, in semiconductor production, in artificial intelligence, rare earth minerals, energy systems, and defense manufacturing. Governments increasingly view these industries through a national security lens rather than a purely economic one. As a result, policymakers have become more willing to direct capital, subsidize strategic industries, impose trade barriers, and even take ownership positions in key firms when national competitiveness is perceived to be at stake. In that sense, corporatism may be emerging not simply because governments want more control, but because geopolitical competition is creating pressure for a more coordinated economic model.
Patrick, outline for us a little bit more about how this emerging economic system upends the old dynamic of business versus labor, which is a cycle that has repeated itself through most of our nation's history.
Historically, politics often resembled a tug-of-war between capital and labor. When labor gained influence, governments expanded worker protections, social programs, and redistribution. When business gained influence, governments reduced taxes, eased regulation, and emphasized profitability and growth. Corporatism tries to end that constant oscillation. The government essentially tells both sides, support the broader national strategy, and you'll both benefit. Business receives favorable favorable treatment through subsidies, contracts, tax policies, or protection from foreign competition. And labor receives employment opportunities, social protections, cultural recognition, or other benefits. The government's objective becomes maintaining support from both constituencies simultaneously.
Well, if the successful corporatist state must appease both business and labor, how is the current U.S. government doing it? Let's look at business first.
The business strategy is relatively clear. The administration has pursued deregulation, tax relief, and policies intended to stimulate domestic investment. But the more distinctive feature is the targeted support for specific sectors viewed as strategically important. Technology has been a major beneficiary. We've seen government efforts to defend U.S. technology firms in international disputes, support domestic semiconductor production, and even participate directly through ownership stakes and guarantees in selected companies. Critical minerals are another example. After China's demonstrated ability to influence global supplies of rare earths and rare earth minerals, the government moved aggressively to support domestic production through financing arrangements, investment programs, and guaranteed purchasing agreements. Defense contractors represent a third pillar. Although the administration has demanded greater efficiency and lower costs from defense firms, proposed increases in defense spending provide significant long-term support for the sector.
And how about the working class, the labor class? What's the strategy here?
Increasingly, the administration's appeal to many working class voters appears to be as much cultural as economic. Economically, policies including protecting programs such as Social Security and Medicare, supporting domestic manufacturing, and promoting reindustrialization. But many voters also respond positively to immigration restrictions, border enforcement, and challenges to diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Whether one agrees with those policies or not, they clearly resonate with portions of the electorate that feel their concerns were previously overlooked. From a corporatist perspective, these cultural and social benefits can be just as important as direct economic gains in maintaining the political support of this group.
Patrick, this strategy appears to demand a powerful leader who ignores traditional restraints. But other recent corporatist governments that you identify, including Spain under Franco and Argentina under Perón, appeared to depend on the staying power of their leaders and their ongoing skill in spreading benefits to different groupings. Here in the United States, are you confident that the corporatist state will continue to build momentum no matter which official or political party leads the government?
I think the broader trend is likely to outlast any one individual leader. The reason is that the underlying forces are structural rather than purely political. From a political perspective, the anger that many voters feel toward elites has helped create an environment where they accept or actively want especially strong and iconoclastic leaders who are willing to shake the old system up. From the perspective of global economics, strategic competition with China isn't going away. Supply chain security remains important. Governments now possess far more economic management tools than they did 20 or 30 years ago. Citizens increasingly expect government intervention during economic disruptions. In addition, many policies initially introduced by one party often become accepted by successors once they're in place. So while future leaders may adopt different methods or emphasize different constituencies, I think the general trend toward greater government involvement in the economy is likely to persist.
Well, you've identified new and developing tools that government leaders can use to manage the economy in a corporatist way. What are these tools?
The toolkit for economic management has expanded enormously since the global financial crisis. For example, the Fed has developed asset purchase programs, emergency lending facilities, and other mechanisms for supporting financial markets. Fiscal authorities have become more comfortable with direct payments to households, industry subsidies, infrastructure spending, industrial policy, and targeted incentives. And now, governments can influence economic outcomes through ownership stakes, procurement guarantees, price supports, tariffs, tax incentives, and strategic investment programs. Taken together, all these tools give policymakers unprecedented capacity to shape economic activity and cushion downturns.
On balance, Patrick, is a corporatist state good for the health of financial markets, and are recessions less likely?
The answer is both yes and no. On the positive side, greater government intervention can reduce economic instability. Policymakers may be able to soften recessions, stabilize industries, and support asset values during periods of stress. That's one reason recession indicators and credit market spreads now often appear relatively subdued despite substantial economic uncertainty. On the other hand, investors become more dependent on government decisions. If policymakers make poor judgments, favor the wrong industries, or suddenly change priorities, markets can become highly volatile. So while the business cycle may become smoother, political risk becomes increasingly important.
You've talked about this a little bit, but a corporatist state economy prioritizes certain industries as it doles out benefits. And it makes sense that benefits to these industries might translate to stock market success. Going forward, which industries deserve more attention, do you think, in investment accounts?
Well, based on current trends, the strongest candidates are sectors that align with the executives' political and economic priorities. Technology remains near the top of the list, especially semiconductors, advanced computing, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, and related infrastructure. Critical minerals and mining companies involved in rare earths, lithium, copper, and other strategic materials also appear well-positioned. Defense contractors should continue benefiting from elevated geopolitical tensions and increased military spending. We would also include certain segments of industrial manufacturing and infrastructure connected to reshoring and supply chain security. The key principle is to identify industries that the government executive considers essential to his or her political position, to national economic resilience, to technological leadership, or to national security.
And which industries probably will be market laggards going forward?
Industries that fall outside government priorities may face relative disadvantages. Businesses heavily dependent on unrestricted globalization could encounter challenges if trade barriers continue increasing. Perhaps more important, companies that operate in sectors viewed unfavorably by policymakers may face greater regulation, reduced access to subsidies, or more difficult operating environments. For example, we've seen the administration complain loudly about firms that raise prices for consumers goods and services. In fact, the administration has launched investigations into some of them. Investors should pay close attention to sectors that become political targets, because corporatist systems not only reward favored industries, but can also penalize those deemed inconsistent with broader policy and political objectives.
Finally, Patrick, how do these weightings show up in Confluence asset allocation investment models?
The overarching lesson for investors is that government policy is becoming a more powerful driver of investment performance. Therefore, our asset allocation process places increasing emphasis on understanding the interaction between geopolitics, industrial policy, and market behavior. That means maintaining at least some exposure to sectors benefiting from government support, including technology, critical minerals, advanced manufacturing, and defense, while being cautious towards sectors facing structural or political headwinds. More broadly, we think the investment landscape of the next decade will be shaped less by pure market forces than by the evolving relationship between governments, business, and society. We think that investors who understand that transition may be better positioned to identify opportunities and manage risks.
Thank you, Patrick. The title of this week's report is The Corporatist State and Its Investment Implications. And you can find a link to the written report on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. The opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. Also, this information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.